Okay, just a couple of things that I'd like to mention. First of all, we've just seen the inflation figures, of course, for the March quarter, up 4.5%. That's really going to stretch so many people who are lower and middle income earners. It will not be compensated for by the tax cuts. Those on high incomes, of course, will be fine. But it's interesting to see where the inflation has hit. It's hit on necessities that cannot be avoided by people on lower middle incomes. And it's hit most particularly on education. The costs in the last year for early childhood education up 12%. That is directly the consequence of government actions. And the inflation at the level that it is now, yes, partly influenced by international commodity prices, but also critically influenced by the rise in GST. This will put families under pressure. This is not a lifestyle choice, as John Key has said, for people. These are basic necessities. Secondly, I'd like to foreshadow a speech that I'm giving this afternoon in Christchurch to the Manufacturers and Exporters Association. I'll be focused particularly on what I see as a looming crisis in skill shortage. We know that the amount of building work in this country will double in the next 12 to 18 months, and that will require double the number of people who have those skills. At the moment, those building trades are going backwards. Apprenticeship intakes are down by 30%, skill training almost halved. And yet, we will see, over the next 12 to 18 months, a critical shortage that will slow the recovery in Christchurch and will also force up prices. The cost of rebuilding Christchurch will be much higher because of that. When I asked the person in charge of the new CERA organisation and the industry in Christchurch last week what skill training programs were in place, the answer was none. That simply is not good enough.
How do you control the price of petrol then? Because that's under the inflation figure is almost 20%. Petrol's got almost 20%. How do you control that? Or is that just part of life?
Well, 3 years ago to this month, John Key stood up in Parliament and asked Helen Clark what she was doing about petrol and dairy prices. Apparently he had the answer then, but the answer is now eluding.
Do you accept that politicians can't do anything about petrol prices?
Oh, John Key claimed that he could 3 years ago to this month. So now he's saying there's nothing he can do about it. On one occasion, he wasn't telling the truth.
But then could you do anything about it? I think that's a question.
I think you can do something about it, and it's this. There couldn't have been a worse time to bring in the extra GST than when prices are already going through the roof. 2.2% of the rise in prices is directly as a result of the government's decision on GST. They made a decision to raise GST when they promised not to. And if you look additionally to that, the 12% rise in education costs for early childhood education, again, directly the consequence of government actions.
So will you take GST off petrol?
No, we won't be doing that. And John Key may have promised that he could do something about dairy and petrol prices, and he has done something about it. He's pushed them up still further through that element of the cost that is the result of higher GST. That is John Key's responsibility.
Would you take GST back to the 12.5% it was?
Well, you know that that would cost the country $3 billion that we don't have. John Key was prepared to push up prices and compensate those on highest incomes but not low and middle incomes. What we need to do is to help low and middle income earners through things like the whole of the GST off fresh fruit and vegetables and the first $100 a week tax free.
How close do you are you to releasing your policy, which would include how you get that money from the higher income earners?
We're working through our taxation and our savings policies at the moment, but as usual, those will be released quite close to the election, not months in advance.
Do you think there are any savings to be made from KiwiSaver by reducing any of those elements?
Well, the government was claiming that it wanted people to save more. KiwiSaver was a brilliant scheme introduced by the last Labor government. It's got more than 1.2 million savers in it. And so too was the superannuation fund, a return of around 8% on $19 billion at the moment. That's great, but both of those funds have been cut back by this government. That will reduce, not increase savings.
Will you fully restore the McCallum Fund again, or is that still a...
Well, I think that's part of the saving policy that we're working on. Couldn't be done overnight, but clearly having a scheme that meets the cost of the baby boomers as they retire is essential if the whole burden of superannuation is not to be met by the younger generation coming through without the prospect of them being able to enjoy the same advantages.
What do you think about that idea in the welfare working group report that you fund welfare in a similar way and try to pre-fund the cost of welfare? Have you thought about that?
No, that's not been one of our considerations. We've always met, for the last 80 years, we've met the costs of social welfare out of the ongoing taxation system.
So you don't think it's a good idea, like we do for ACC or what your government did with super and pre-funded?
No, it's not part of our consideration.
Your economic policy is looking for a lower New Zealand dollar, not perhaps the export sector. Yet the reason, with the New Zealand dollar so high, it means petrol prices and, in fact, food prices are mitigated by it, and they'll be higher if the dollar is lower. How do you get those two things together?
Economics is a dismal science. When something that benefits you on one hand and you regard as good, you know that it will be hurting you on another front. But frankly, with high inflation and with a dollar that's now estimated to rise back into the mid-80s against the American dollar, that's going to hurt a lot of our exporters, particularly in the manufacturing area, and that's going to damage employment prospects. And one of the very bad things about the current level of inflation is that medium incomes have actually fallen, according to Statistics New Zealand. They've fallen because a lot of people are now out of work. That makes it even harder for those families to make ends meet when they've lost family income at the same time as prices have gone
up. So you're saying a high New Zealand dollar is a bad thing, but it's a good thing, because you'll talk about these necessities, petrol prices, food prices.
If you're looking from the perspective of a competitive manufacturing and export industry, a dollar that goes way over 80 cents is going to cause real damage. Yes, it helps sustain imported costs at a lower level, but then maybe we need to look at how we can find alternatives, for example, to imported fuel, and that's through areas like biofuel. That really starts to make sense when you look at the rising cost of fuel.
If you look at Australia, the dollar's 104 against the US, and they're going gangbusters.
Well, they are, but that's because a whole lot of things that they've done have been the exact opposite of what the national government has done in this country. They've promoted innovation and creativity, for example, through a 15% R&D tax credit. They've focused on skill training when this government has ignored it. They gave stimulation across the economy rather than just to people at the top. All of those things mean that the Australians have been doing better, and the wage gap has grown, not shrunk, as national promised.
Given the state of the economy, do you think you're going to have to really rework your tax policy even further now and target those higher income earners in a greater or bigger way than you were initially thinking about?
I think, given the pressures that are coming on, particularly in regard to the Christchurch earthquake, if there is going to be any funding raised to offset that cost, then it has to come from the windfall gains of the people at the very top, not from middle and low income people who are already stretched.
But do you think you might have to go into the 40% tax rates, or would you
not? I'm not going into those sort of details at this point. There are a number of different options that we're looking at in taxation
obviously,
policy. I'll announce them when we've decided on
obviously that. The top rate is one, though, that you're looking at, clearly.
Yeah, well, look, it can't be right that middle and low income people have taken a hammering with prices rising much faster than their wages or the tax cuts that they got on income tax, while high-income people, you know, people like John Keegan himself and his very well-off mates, more than $1,000 a week. That can't be fair.
But despite this this picture, Mr. Gough, I mean, National's poll ratings are still extremely high, and the latest ones out last night showed Labor's poll ratings going to historically pretty low level. What's going
well,
on?
I prefer the TV1 poll results personally.
I prefer the TV3 poll.
Even those numbers are 20 points behind, though.
Yeah, I think the effect of rising cost of living, the effect of the economy having stalled, of unemployment being high and rising, will have a corrosive effect on this government. And one of the key issues at the election will be the sale of state assets. And the more that we get focus on those issues, the more I think you can see some erosion of the government's lead.
Why do you think you're not getting the message across?
I think we've been heavily distracted over the last few weeks for the reasons that all of you are fully familiar with. In the last week of Parliament, we focused back on issues
That was good. That's what I expect the Labor Party to be doing over the next 6 months.
We've got the insurance industry saying that if any other local body councils around the country have any big insurance liabilities, they'll be in trouble. The money's not there. Do you think the government should underwrite that and protect those councils?
Government currently meets 60% of local authority disaster costs. The other 40% is met by local government. They have reinsurance, but they've been unable to get reinsurance until the 30th of June. That creates a massive problem for them, and that's something that central and local government have got to work through together.
What's your view on whether the government, again, should step in with a chequebook to underwrite those policies or underwrite those councils?
Well, I'd want to look at what the options were that were available. I haven't seen the papers, so I'm not familiar with that. Obviously, this is talking about ratepayers and New Zealand taxpayers. It's a little better than, I suppose, subsidising foreign-owned media companies.
It's a bit of a concern, though, to leave so many councils vulnerable until the end of June.
Well, it's a real concern, and questions have to be asked how that that happened. Clearly, having a two-month period where you don't have reinsurance for disaster is a huge risk, and we need to see if that was in any way avoidable.
You said all these wonderful things about Australia, but they're also mining.
Yeah.
Should we be looking at that then?
Oh, well, the National Government did. They were going to dig up our national parks. They spent 2 years planning to do that and then dropped it like a hot potato when New Zealand has indicated that it's totally unacceptable.
Mr. Gough, there's any number of issues, things like asset sales, which National says it won't do unless it gets a mandate to do them at the next election. Do you think there's a risk that those things will happen purely because Labor is not presenting a credible alternative with the disunity that's apparent in the party at the moment?
But people have a very clear choice on asset sales at the end of the year. If they vote for a national government, then they will see their most valuable assets built up by generations of New Zealanders sold off. We've seen what's happened already with Contact Energy. $100 million a year going out of this country in dividends to foreign investors. $1 billion since National privatised it. In November 1999. New Zealanders will need to make that choice. Labor's policy is very clear.
The CPI figures today show the electricity prices rose 6% from a year ago, though. Could the private sector do better, perhaps?
No, I don't think so. And all of international experience shows that they don't do better. In Contact Energy, its prices have risen much faster than the SOEs. In Australia and the United Kingdom, privatisation meant much higher rises in prices in a market that is not truly competitive. At least the only saving grace of the high prices with state-owned enterprises is that money is recycled back to New Zealanders and kept in New Zealand.
So it's good to have high energy prices if government owns some of the power.
No, I don't think it is, and you've seen comments that I've made in the past that while it's very nice for the government to have $700 million in dividends, and that does go back to New Zealand taxpayers, it would be even better if you keep the prices to householders and to industry down to a reasonable level in a market that's not competitive.
So you'd be dismayed with the 6% electricity price increases?
Well, I'm concerned that the critical things affecting New Zealand families that they can't avoid are all going up. The cost of education, the cost of power, the cost of petrol, the cost of food. Some of that cost may not be avoidable because of international conditions. Much of it has been imposed directly as a result of government decisions, such as on early childhood education and increasing GST. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.